Blog Talk Radio.
Algorithm or recipe, as it were. It is very important in our unstable times that each individual has an understanding of the term seduction. We suggested in our last show that seduction is the art of promising everything and delivering nothing. That was our informal definition of seduction. And we are providing a general understanding of the term from the biblical documents. And this morning our focus is going to be on Genesis chapter 3, because in Genesis chapter 3 we are provided a prototype of seduction. And so therefore it is from Genesis chapter 3 that we learn that the seduction motif will continue throughout history, because the seduction motif shows us something that will always be used as a strategic manipulative weapon in order to undermine others. Some seducers believe themselves to be clever, and many of them are. Their personalities can also be very winsome, yet most decidedly antisocial. But that's on a psychological level. Today, our focus is on spiritual aspect of seduction. And again, we're going to begin with Genesis chapter 3. I'm going to read verse 1. Genesis 3, 1. Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God really say, 'You must not eat from any tree in the garden?'" The woman, that is the Isha, said to the serpent, "You may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, 'You must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die.' You will not surely die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom. Very interesting, is it not? She took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband, who was with her, and he ate it. When the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. These seven verses provide for us a very poignant narrative. And nowhere in the story, in this narrative, let me say that there's no suggestion that the fruit taken was an apple. Now, in verse 1, we read the serpent. I need to give you the Hebrew word here. It is nakash, the nakash, N-A-C-H-A-S-H, the nakash. Now, the Hebrew meaning of the word nakash, which has been transliterated as serpent, is astonishing because the word suggests one who is light, or who is given to light, or the shining one, the shining one. So, speaking of the physical presence, there is an attractiveness. There is a physical appeal presented for this one in the Hebrew text. The Hebrew text does not suggest that this one slithers about. No, it suggests that he is the shining one, full of attractiveness. The term nakash means to observe attentively. This is one who observes attentively. This is very important to understand, to observe attentively. It also means brass or brazen. And it also, the term also suggests serpent. And so, here we have a very frightening account of the presence of the diabolic in the garden of delight. Because Eden means delight. And so when we, in the Hebrew, we speak of Gan Eden, that is garden of delight. This pair called man, both the male and female were called jointly man by Elohim. Wanted for nothing. They lacked nothing. Please keep in mind that in Genesis chapter 2, God gives an account of the man. And we read in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, the Lord God formed the man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of lives, not singular breath of life, but breath of lives, plural. Speaking of the unitary nature of man, man is physical. Man is physical, and he is also spiritual. That is, he is spiritual essence too. And so, the biblical record affirms the unitary nature of persons. The Bible does not affirm Cartesian dualism, that is, individuals are a body and a soul. Now, that division was made much later in Western history, something that I will get into at another time. It's very unfortunate. But the Bible affirms the unitary nature of persons. In verse 8, we read in chapter 2, "Now the Lord God had planted a garden in the east, in Eden, and there he put the man he had formed. And the Lord God made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. In the middle of the garden were the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil." Now, respectively, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the word for good is tob, full of pleasure, and the word for evil is ra, R-A, a very, very profound term in the biblical Hebrew. It means full of pain. And so, in Hebrew, the terms are very descriptive of the nature of this tree. Tob, full of pleasure; ra, full of pain. And so, there's a balance there. There is a homeostasis about this tree. God presents balance, as it were. And so the Adam is given to understand under this balance through the motif of the tree. Okay, the tree is thematic here. And later on, in 33 AD, Jesus will die for the sins of mankind by hanging on a zulon, that is, a tree. So, and verse 15 of chapter 2, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to take care of it. And the Lord God commanded the man, 'You are free to eat from any tree in the garden.'" Note carefully the language. Note carefully the syntax of the language. You are free. You are free to eat a cow, to imbibe, to satiate the physical appetite. And so the gift of eating is given to the Adam, to the light, not only to delight the eye, or to delight the senses, the sense of smell, but also the palate will also experience delight through the intake of nutrients. And so this is a wonderful blessing that God has provided for the Adam. "But you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat of it, you will surely die." And so there is a balance here. I want to bring this out because in Genesis chapter 3, in this encounter with the diabolic in the garden, these details are deliberately left out. God said, "You are free. You are free to eat." And then, on the other hand, God said, "But you must not." And so, the life of the Adam has balance. There is a command not to do, not to engage in that which is harmful. And so we see that man has is indeed autonomous, but he is there's no sense of absolute autonomy. He is not absolutely independent of his of the Creator and his commandments. God's commandments are given as a fence about us in order to protect us. And then God goes on, and then in Genesis chapter 2, God forms a helper, as it were, for the man. Now, when we get to Genesis chapter 3, verse 1, and we see that the first verse speaks about the Nakash. And in the Hebrew, it is suggested that we are coming in on a conversation that had already been taking place. But now a third character is introduced. And it's interesting that this character is inside of the home of the Adam and his Isha. Inside the home. In the book of Revelation, we're told that the abode of Satan is, he had moved into some aspects of visible church. Now, I want you to please note carefully the algorithm, that is the recipe of the Nakash. He observes attentively. And then we're told, which speaks of the essence of his character. He was more crafty. That is subtle about who he is and what he does. This one is characterized by guile, or the arts of deception, hence seduction. The serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. And please note the contrast and how he is set apart singularly as more crafty than any of the wild beasts or the wild animals that the Lord God had made. In the book of Revelation, the beast who will come upon the scene at the end of human history in the eschaton will be called Therion. That is not merely the beast as in the English text, but Therion, that is wild beast. Wild beast. One who believes that he has absolute autonomy from God. Indeed, he will set himself up as God, and he will blasphemously claim that he is God. So the terms that are being introduced to us here and what we see in Genesis will be very important to us, very important to us later when we study eschatology. He said, that is, the Nakash said to the woman. Now, understand as we go into, this dialogue, as it were, that the Nakash has observed attentively. And his attack is not launched against the Adam, but against the Shah. And so he said to the woman, and please note what he is going to say to her. Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Now, I want you to catch the net. I want you to catch the trap. For instance, there is this old piece in which, well, some people have said popularly, the lawyer said to this individual, have you stopped eating your wife? Well, think about that. To either answer the affirmative or negative is entrapment. I want you to see that the net has been laid for her. She is artless in the ways of this type of thinking. And he has fashioned his words in such a way as to appeal to her mentality. And she hears on one level what he is saying, and yet the words have been deliberately designed to trap her. The primary suggestion that he gives, is to call into question the veracity of God. Notice, he knows who God is. Notice that he knows that she and the Adam have a relationship with Elohim, or Yahweh Elohim. And so, here is a discussion or dialogue, let us say, about God. Many theologies begin with a discussion or an attempted elucidation or discussion about God. And notice how he speaks of God. There's a suggestion that God cannot be trusted. Did God really say, you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Did God really say, you must not eat from any tree in the garden? And so the trap is set. In verse 2, the moment she attempts to answer, in the cash, it is over. The end is a foregone conclusion. It's over. He has now closed the deal. He has sealed the deal. She has taken the bait. She will attempt to answer a question that was never really a question the way she understood a question. This was the bait that was used in order to undermine who she was completely. In 2 Corinthians 11:3, Paul says that Eve, I'll use that term now, even though it is not found in the Old Testament, Eve was thoroughly and completely deceived. The woman said to the Nakash, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden. But God did say, you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die." And so you see, she adds to the commandment of God. God did not say that. In Genesis 2, verse 16, "And the Lord God commanded the man, you are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat of it, you will surely die." The fact that she added her interpretation to a direct command is very prominent here. Genesis 3, at the end of verse 3, "And you must not touch it, or you will die." The serpent, in verse 4, seizes upon that last part, and he manipulates the language against her insight, or what limited insight that she had was used against her. Remember, the Nakash observed, or one who observes attentively. This is for our study, this is the seduction algorithm that must be studied in great detail and not relegated to a mere Sunday school story and pictures about a primary pair, and the woman is reaching out to pick a fruit with a smiling serpent. The way that it is presented to children in the West. And so what is removed is the very dire and serious nature of what is happening, and the fact that her consciousness is being manipulated. Her consciousness is being thoroughly manipulated. And she does not realize that she is in the midst of a process and that she is contributing to her own undoing. It's a contributing factor to her own undoing. And so that is of vital importance. It is important to understand the process, the recipe, the algorithm of seduction. God has provided his word for us so that we become very astute and very aware of those who would undermine us, who come to us as emissaries to our own undoing. Paul talks about those ministers of Satan who have transformed themselves into light. They do this, they take this approach in order to destroy the abode, the ethos, the habitat of the called out ones. We will continue this discussion next time. My name is Dr. Josiah Rich. God bless you. Have a wonderful day. Help you. On your matter cost.